Is shale oil production in America hitting a plateau? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. First, market participants today are clinging to any hint about the trade war or the future of interest rates. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors in Chicago.
Optimism is coming back because we think that the Chinese potentially are offering an olive branch. Remember that yesterday we had concerns over trade, which brought the market down. The Chinese suggested they might leave the trade talks a day early, and we only have 2 days worth of talks, so cutting time in half. And also, the U.S. imposed additional sanctions on Chinese technology companies. Fortunately, the Chinese came back today and offered out an olive branch, suggesting that they might buy some more agricultural products from us in exchange for a delay of those tariffs, which are supposed to kick in on October 15th.
All right. So accounting for some of the upbeat mood that we're seeing in early trading this morning. Now, the chair of the Federal Reserve yesterday said that he wanted to buy more U.S. treasuries. He said not to act as economic stimulus, i.e. quantitative easing, but to help out glitches in the money market. But he also said some things that give us a sense of his view on interest rates ahead.
The comments around interest rate cuts were very tempered, and that implies that perhaps the market is overestimating the probability that that rate cut is going to happen at the very next meeting.
Susan Schmidt at Aviva Investors, thank you.
Thank you.
Shale oil, hydraulic fracturing, fracking, whatever you want to call it, is a key part of U.S. energy independence. It's also a fossil fuel that comes with environmental costs. Well, government data show U.S. domestic production went up just 1% in the first half of this year versus 7% the same period a year earlier. The Economist magazine's New York bureau chief Charlotte Howard covers energy, green and not green. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, David.
So have we arrived at peak domestic oil production?
Probably not. And I think more importantly is to think about just what a huge surge in production America has seen. So years ago, you can remember people worrying about our energy dependence on foreign oil. Now, next year, America will probably become a net exporter of oil. It's the world's biggest oil producer already. So it's just been an extraordinary run. However, if you look at the business of the companies that are doing this fracking, doing shale oil, their prospects are much more mixed.
Well, because there's a track record, and a lot of people have burned through a lot of capital who've invested in hydraulic fracturing.
That's right. So there's been this long-running question within the shale industry for whether you can be a profitable, sustainable shale company. And the reason this is a challenge is because fracking involves blasting shale rock with water and sand to get oil out of the shale rock. And it requires a continuous deployment of capital because wells are depleted very quickly. So after you've drilled one well, you need to then go set up and drill another well. And the result is that it's very capital intensive.
And so investors have become a little bit leery of, hey, wait a minute, we put all this money in, you burn through it, and we're not seeing the returns we expected.
Well, investors are basically saying, we want to see consistent free cash flow. We want to see that you can both increase production, but do so in a sustainable manner where it doesn't look like you're just blowing through cash.
All right. Well, I'm not voting for higher wholesale oil prices, but if a price of a barrel of oil went up $10 or $20, would that change some of that?
It might. I mean, in Midland, Texas, which is sort of the center of this, when oil prices are high and the shale companies are really going strong, a truck driver can make over $100,000 and the hotel rooms go for over $400 a night.
A night
in these very mediocre hotels, I can attest to. And even if the oil price were to rise, you would see a pickup in activity. But investors just are skeptical about this as a long-term model, particularly if we think about an environment in which at some point oil demand might not grow as quickly.
The Economist magazine's New York bureau chief, Charlotte Howard, thank you.
Thank you.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver's in Shanghai today trying to contain the backlash after the general manager of the Houston Rockets tweeted, then deleted, support for the protests in Hong Kong. Meanwhile, Comedy Central's South Park has been blocked on China's internet after an episode tweaking China's government and American companies that do business there. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
The NBA is the dominant sports league in China, according to Thomas Baker, who teaches sports management at the University of Georgia. He says the NBA would like to keep expanding there, but without seeming like a sellout to U.S. fans.
I mean, in terms of appeasing China, it can't go too far, or at least publicly, because then you risk alienating your local base.
On the other hand, South Park clearly has no interest in smoothing things over with China.
I want to be proud of who we are, guys. And anybody who would betray their ideals just to make money in China isn't worth a lick of spit.
For South Park, obviously, there is less financial difficulty in, quote-unquote, thumbing their noses.
Matthew Quint heads the Center on Global Brand Leadership at Columbia Business School. He says there wasn't a lot of demand for South Park in China to begin with. South Park's creators have issued a fake apology to China, further mocking the communist leadership, and they are using all the attention to advertise. I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
South Park's 300th episode airs tonight. It premiered in 1997. If the main characters aged in real time, Cartman, Kenny, Kyle, and Stan would be, looks like, in their 30s, right? In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.